Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest tonight is Kathy Cat Hulbert, expert at blackjack, poker, large dogs, fine wine, and dealing with male chauvinists. Her book is called Outplaying the Boys and is particularly addressed to women poker players. Munch and I usually hem and haw around and don't introduce the guests until later in the show, but we have so much to talk to Kat about that we're going to start right out with her. So, Kat Hulbert, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good evening.
I just want to know who's buying the drinks after the show.
As many as you want. All right. Your book, Outplaying the Boys, consists of short chapters of advice addressed to women poker players. I read it, enjoyed it, and so far haven't noticed any changes in my masculinity. Who knows, maybe I'll be the last to know. Now, why did you pick this particular audience to write to, and how is writing to women players different from writing to players in general?
The ideas are so good in this book that I wish maybe I had done it to the male and female audience, because my information is a culmination of some of the greatest poker minds, male and female, that I know. So the book is so good because some people have really provided me information that was invaluable. Having, you know, if you're young and cute, which I was at one time, I had men, and I went for the really smart ones, the ones with good reputations, that could teach me. I was probably just a gaming whore.
So I'd like to actually go back in time a little bit, because before you got into poker, you were a professional blackjack player going back over 30 years ago, and played with the Czechs and played with the Ken Houston team in Atlantic City. So a lot of people are interested in Ken Houston. So I'd like to talk a little bit about what your experience was like playing in Atlantic City when the casinos first opened with that team.
I thought at the time, you know, it's unsure whether what I'm saying is going to be absolutely true, but there were two women at that time attempting to learn blackjack. So I was in competition. Can I say people's name, like Chuck Andrulis?
Well, you just did, but I mean, Chuck was one of the Czechs.
I was using him as an example. So I'll change his girlfriend's name. His girlfriend's name was Cindy. It really wasn't, but we'll say Cindy. And she was a prostitute, and she and I were in competition who could learn blackjack the fastest. And she did, in fact, learn faster than me. But now we go to Atlantic City, and it's because the team I was on, which was officially the Paul Rylance team at that point, it turned into the Czechoslovakian team when the Czechs broke off from Paul because of me mostly. But I would think it would have something to do with Paul's terrible personality. So Paul taught me, I go, but he merged bankrolls with Ken Houston because you had an edge off the deck of, like a half a percent off the deck because of this early surrender rule that the legislature had made an error in. So resorts opened, and every card counter in the world rushes there because now they can flat bet off the top. There are so many people there that even though Ken was very chauvinistic and would never test me for my own ability to play, I guess he thought I was attractive enough to be his bimbo who sat at the table, because just having someone occupy a seat next to him was worth a lot of money to him. So eventually he allowed me to make basic strategy decisions. But because his count was so complex, he sometimes leaned on me. He could not really converse with the pit bosses and other people and keep his count. I'm not making a slur against him. He just had a very complicated count versus the Stanford Wong high-low system. So I would at that time, you know, tell him hopefully the correct count.
So this is just mind-boggling because this was only 30 years ago, and so he just refused to even allow you to test simply because you were a woman.
Exactly. And your good friend, Daryl Purpose, worked with me a lot and went through what rigmarole I would have to do to be tested, you know, flashing cards really fast and keeping the account. And so he had me all primed. And even though Daryl said, come on, Ken, give her a chance, Ken still did not give me any chance at that time for even to be tested.
But the prostitute learned faster than the bimbo. Is that what?
The prostitute did. She was so good.
Did she go on to play? To a blackjack career.
She would get very angry at Chuck. You know, they would have a battle, and then she would just go into a casino with his money and just flat bet, you know, right through the deck. Or she'd go home and cut all his shirts in half. So she'd get pretty hostile. She had her own ways of dealing with Chuck.
Go
ahead, Bob.
Well, I'm just curious. You played blackjack a long time and poker a long time, and I'm just wondering how poker players and blackjack players are the same and how they're different.
You know, I wanted to say right off the bat that I use races in my example, and I only do so because I believe it's relevant to the story. If you disagree with that, just don't invite me to your next cocktail party. I use races. I think it's relevant. Anything I'm going to say about the differences between poker players, it's my personal experience. It's my generalization. If somebody's listening, they go, oh, that's not true. Okay, it may not be. But it's my personal experience, what I think the differences are. And I got hooked up with high-quality blackjack people. Their values cannot be disputed as far as giving a fair count at the end of the day. You know, they were hard workers. And when I came into poker, it was so much different. There were so many scumbags around, so many people desperate for money. You get so practiced when someone is going to ask to borrow money from you. Some of the funniest times is this guy comes up to me. He'd just gotten out of jail, and he goes, oh, my God. He goes, I don't remember you looking this bad. And he goes, can I borrow $200?
Oh, that's a good – that's got to work every time.
Yeah, that's a good opening line.
You know, that was funny. Another one, which is really funny.
Did you have a good comeback? I mean, clearly you said no, but did you have a good comeback?
I had no good comeback. It was just so easy. He had just stolen – the reason he was in jail is he'd stolen his girlfriend's car from the East Coast and had driven it to the West Coast, and his best friend – turned him into the police. So that's an example of poker's best friend stories.
Uh-huh.
Other story about, people ask you every single day to borrow money. There's people that you used to be friends with that have gone broke that it's harder to say no to. One of the most caustic players and most clever and original and should have been on TV was Steve Richman, who has now passed away. I'm surprised he passed away by natural causes.
As opposed to at the wrong end of the bullet or something.
I can't hear a thing at the moment.
All right, so keep talking.
Okay, so he comes up to me. Steve comes up to me and he says, can I borrow, I think it was $20. It was a very minimal amount. but he had always talked to me so poorly at the table. I said, this is so easy to say no to you. And so he goes to Terry King, who I'm actually bankrolling in a game at that moment. He asks her for $100. She gives it off her stack, which is actually my money. He comes back and says to me, now she's a real lady. Oh, that's such a bad beat for me. But the funniest loan story was, because you can smell somebody when they're approaching you, it's this older woman, she always got me mixed up with Marsha Wagner, which I thought was insulting to both of us, because I was fatter than her, and she was a lot older than me, so somehow the mix-up was insulting to both of us. But this woman approaches, she thinks I'm Marsha. I head for the other door in Hollywood Park. I just turn around and go out a different exit door. I'm winding through the cars in the parking lot. This car pulls out and brushes into my legs, you know, which is kind of startling. I go, hey, what are you doing? She opens the door. It's this woman that was going to ask to borrow money from her, from me. And she goes, Marsha, can I write you a check for $2,000? She hit me with her car.
That was probably easy to say no to her, too.
Yeah, that was easy. That was easy. But on the way up, I did lose a lot of money, loaning out small amounts of money. I was tricked. And then after a while, you just get so hardened. You know, your compassion is so low. It's so easy to say no. You just have to.
Have a high opinion of professional poker players.
Well, not that I ever, you know, I'm not old enough to have seen the old timers that were so brilliant at playing and cheating, mentioning no names, but Danny Robeson, who turned Christian, would tell a lot of stories and there'd be no reason for him to lie about it, so I have information through him, and he was one of the players. So there isn't a lot of respect for that. There's really no one that is beyond suspicion in that category of the old-timers. And now even the players on TV, you know, they're just so boring. Antonio Espondiari, oh, it's so good to be American. I'm so happy to be in this country. How many times have we heard this? I felt like saying, if you say that one more time, Antonio, I'm just going to be sick. You know, why don't they come up with some new lines? And, you know,
now your mentor for poker was David Hayden, and you met him in a rather interesting way. Do you want to tell us that story?
I have a friend who is very, very shy. Back there, to even look up and meet the eyes of a woman was hard for him. So we had gone to the Hilton Hotel that night to listen to David Hayden speak. Again, I'm very attracted to people that are very smart and very good at what they do in the game world.
That's why you like me so much. Is that right? Let's go on.
Well, I'm just learning about your expertise.
Just
but
go on.
I had heard of your name. You know, I hadn't heard of your name flipping through Card Player. You know, it was somewhere in my head. So we're at the lecture. And again, I'm talking to him. I go, you've got to ask Lily out. It's so easy to ask somebody out. What is the worst that could happen? They're not going to pull out a gun and shoot you. They're just going to say, no, I'm not interested. So you tuck your pride away. You walk away. What's the big deal? And he says, you don't understand. My asking Lily out would be like you asking David Hayden out in front of these 400 people in this. And I said, if I ask David Hayden out in front of these 400 people, you'll ask Lily out. And this is what I call the world's greatest gambling renege. So the Q&A period is happening, and this wasn't easy for me. I'm not saying that this just came out easily, but I only put my hand up, and it was getting near the end of the time. I put it up, but just a little bit, and he calls on me. He says, you know, the young woman in the back of the room, and, you know, at 38, that's not how I was looking behind me. Who else is behind me here? So I stand up. I'm the only one that has ever stood up at a question at that period. And I say, Mr. Hayden, the only one that has said Mr. Hayden. I said, could you give me the exact odds of my chances of getting a date with you? The whole audience laughs. it really takes him by surprise.
I'll bet.
You know, he doesn't give a real clever answer, but, you know, he doesn't turn me down either. And it was probably within a week or two we were living together, and then I was living with the best seven-card stud player that I thought. He is a true gentleman of the trade. You know, someone I respect more than any other poker player.
Really, but it was a renege. Somebody didn't ask.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. My friend, Ira. Ira reneged on the greatest bet in history and did not ask Lily out. He could not summon himself to do it. When his face, when I asked David Hayden out, he held his head down on the table. He looks like his blood vessels were going to burst out of his forehead. He was so embarrassed for me. And he didn't even have to do anything. So I do, you know, I really love David. He is my love of my life.
So now that there's an incident of you picking the man up, but you have a couple of pretty strange stories about guys with interesting approaches trying to pick you up. I'm thinking of two in particular. One was the guy who claimed that he had played with the Ken Houston team.
Oh, I'm living in one of these. You know, when we started out, we were pretty low-income people on the blackjack people group. We were trying to save money, and every dime was important to us because we had to invest. And one of those apartments for singles only I was staying, I was bringing down my laundry down three flights of concrete stairs, lucky not to trip over my feet. And this, the manager of the apartment was coming up, and he said, you know, I saw you at the blackjack pits last night. And I'm just listening and listening, and he starts, you know, his chest gets bigger and his eyes get wide, and he starts to boast, I was on Ken Houston's Blackjack City team. You know, I was the first one that went to resorts. And I said, this poor schmo, what are the odds that he's actually talking to someone that was on that team? You know? And he wasn't. So that was very funny, you know. And he went on to ask me out, and that was easy to say no to. That was easy to say no.
That's a bad beat. The only
that
woman in the world.
That is a bad beat.
Yeah, there's only two, and the other one was a prostitute. Well, she might have said yes.
You know, it was Ian Anderson who said, there's not a woman that could ever count cards because they didn't have the emotional stability and the fortitude and the fearlessness in order to do it. So
take that in.
That has changed a lot. And I really wanted to bring... I started writing classes in UCLA maybe 20 years ago, and the teacher gave us then, what do you want to accomplish in this course? And at that point in time, I said, I want to write a book to strengthen women's feelings about themselves and raise their self-esteem so they can play poker and be better games player against men.
Uh-huh.
And 20 years later, that's what I accomplished.
Yes, you did.
So I was really happy about that. So I was a forerunner. I'm happy about that. And that recent, the recent Oscars, in that situation with Seth MacFarlane getting up and doing the boobs. The boobs
song.
And I didn't know how I felt about that. You know, I really went into neutral. And I was thinking, I think a lot of people are going to object to this. And it did become very controversial. And it does seem that the women that are younger just said, you know, why are you old timers taking such offense to this? It was just a joke. Get real. But they aren't the ones that started the whole thing and really had to stand up to men at the poker table and undergo the chauvinism that existed 30 years ago. You know, they really didn't. And now they'll say proudly, oh, I'm not a feminist, like it's a dirty word, you know. So
yeah.
They're lucky. They're lucky there was women like us, because women became very invaluable to the poker world and poker teams. And especially girl George, who was able to do with her mind, you know, keeping track of cards in the deck better than any male has ever been able to do. so
sequencing
some women
you're talking
that are really,
about. She was a sequencer, yeah.
I
wanted to ask you, so the poker boom really exploded. I want to say 2003 when Chris Moneymaker won. And at the time, I mean, poker was just getting on TV. And at the time, if you were not the best female player in the world, you were certainly in the top three. And you know, I mean, a lot of people considered you, you know, one of the top poker players around. Why didn't you get into that? I mean, there was so much money to be made going on TV and getting sponsors. Why did you choose not to go there?
There's a German saying that means strength through joy. At that particular time, I had started to become disillusioned with what it meant to be a poker player. I had started teaching women classes. I had started getting the feedback of how it felt to give to someone, to make them appreciate you rather than being just a taker. You know, they were so appreciative, and I really have great talent at being a teacher. And so I was losing my competitive edge to go through what it takes to be a poker player, to be able to take on, you know, disgusting comments every day and to fight back. And I started to value, my ideals were changing. And I think gambling really builds a lot of false values. For instance, when I started out, my attitude was, the higher your IQ, the more I wanted to sleep with you. My goal was to sleep with every person in the Ivy, not every person in the Ivy League, but at least one man from Ivy League college. And I took too much time sleeping with Dartmouth men, and I didn't make my goal. So,
you've given up on it?
There's still time.
I no longer think that having a high IQ makes you a superior person. And when I think about my sister and what she sacrificed in her life, and she believes herself just to be average, but she has such patience and compassion, and she gives so much to the people around her, and she works so hard that I really respect her more and what she can give to the world than any other gambler that I know. And one person that we know in common is, he said to me once, Bill, he goes, Bill has more money than you, and therefore I value him more than you as a person. And I couldn't believe he said that. I just couldn't believe it, because we were best friends for 20 years. How could he make that evaluation? And it was just like it hit an arrow through my forehead. You know, how can you evaluate people like that? And so I started to get a little, in your Gambling Wizards book, they made a statement that I had no leaks. In order to start managing and winding down at the end of the day, I started eating too much. I started drinking too much. I started to become unhealthy emotionally and physically. I needed to change, or I was going to have a very early death. I needed to take better care of myself. And this all came around the poker boom. And I wouldn't have been very good. It was all going to go toward no limit hold'em anyway. And I wasn't going to be a good no limit hold'em player because I'm too curious. I would spend too much money on the river when I should have folded, saying, oh, I just want to see what you have. I'll call $20,000. And on an obvious hand that should have been folded. Instead, which that was my expertise game, it was never very wrong to call a bet on the river. You know, the pot odds were always correct to call the bet. So I would do so. No limit hold'em. That's a whole different game. Yeah, no limit hold'em I'm talking about. Limit hold'em I love because it's really fast. But in no limit hold'em, it is often so incorrect to call a bet on the river because the amount is just not worth the investment.
Right,
and I think I would be calling too often. I don't know what I said. I'm glad you corrected me if I was wrong. And the one thing I've never really talked about in print before is that I am bipolar. I was diagnosed bipolar by psychiatrist after my blackjack career. And it's very interesting what playing poker can do to a bipolar brain. It stimulates you in an artificial way to go to manic or depressive. So you really have to hold yourself steady, and I was really concerned about becoming emotionally stable at that time, too. I just really wanted to change my life around. And I had viewed people, and I asked a lot of old players, I go, do you still love playing poker? Because I think I loved playing poker longer than most people do. But this coating of bitterness was starting to happen to me, where I could sit at a table and start to dislike someone with no reason at all. You know, this is not a healthy perspective in looking at the human race. Everyone I looked in the poker room, I was going, oh, what a scumbag. Oh, I can't stand them. Oh, I feel so much hate. You know, it's just so unhealthy. And some people that have left the blackjack and gambling world will say it's an unhealthy environment. I know that's not that good for your show. It depends upon your personality. It depends on how much money you make. It depends on how successful you are. It has all these components, but I'd hit my limit to hearing disgusting things said to me.
So back before you hit your limit, there's an interesting story about you losing a big time to an empty chair. Now, this sounds impossible. How do you lose to an empty chair?
I walk up to the table. Now, this is early, before many women are playing poker. And at that time, in Caesar's Palace, 50 and 100 was the highest game you could play, and it was stud. Walk up, seat, take a seat. Roger King, who is very wealthy, who was very wealthy, he's dead now, but he's the name you see at the end of Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune, King Productions. He nonchalantly flips me a $500 chip and says, you know, take off, girly, I don't play with girls. And I say something rude. I say something.
You threw back the $500 chip?
I fired it back. And I
fired
said,
it
unfortunately,
back.
Unfortunately for you, I do play with
something
blah,
rude.
Blah, blah.
Yeah, blah, blah, blah. We can all use our imagination. Good.
You know, ignorant, blah, blah, blah. So hostility brews. And And all of a sudden, he says, I'm going to go take a piss. And I hate that word, piss, so that aggravates me right there. And you can tell that he's only going downstairs in the escalators in Caesar's Palace. He's only going to be gone a few minutes. And he goes, if she raises, raise her all in. Now, I have about 2,700 in front of me. I'm anxious if I'm involved in the hand that no one else at the table becomes involved in the hand. They're all aware that this is going to be a pretty big pot. I get these measly pair of sixes, and I go for it.
Well, that's a starting hand. Better.
That's my starting hand.
But compared to a random hand, that's better than average.
Way better.
Well, that's your hold'em philosophy. You know, it's not something I want to take out on a limb with me. If I'm going to be putting $2,700 into this pot, I prefer, you know, have something a little bit better than this. But it's okay. It's good enough. I believe, you believe, it's good enough. I take off. These were buried sixes, by the way. I make three sixes on 4th Street. His hand is developing. They've turned it over now so everybody can see it because he gave them permission to do that. And I can kind of see, well, God, I'm so overpoweringly the favorite now. And I can see the hand developing around 5th Street. I go, I don't see any way I can lose this hand. On 6th Street, I stare into his hand and I go, oh, my God, if he gets a 6, I'm going to lose to a straight.
There's only one left.
There's only one left. So that makes me 98-point-something favorite to win this hand. And I could also fill up. There goes sail. Sometimes you can see a card sail through the air. And into his hand goes the six. I lose the pot. He's not even at the table. Everybody is laughing. And I have to admit, I thought it was pretty funny myself, especially because it makes such a good story. I think I'm getting value off the story that it's made.
But the 2,700 minus the 500 you walked away from, if you had to do it over again, would you have kept the 500 and gone to another table? And
Absolutely. I would have kept the 500. That was worth at least 6 or 7 hours expected value for me. I'm not at the table to make to fight for women or equal rights amendment. It's not there. Take the money. What's the big deal? He is the jack, not me, but I was a jack for getting involved in let's have this competitive contest, you know, man against woman. So that was a big mistake.
Lesson learned.
And now I say when women, when men try to bully women to leaving the table, I say, you're going to have to play a lot higher than this to get rid of us.
Yeah.
So that kind of puts them down, you know, playing at the same limit that a woman can afford. So that's a good, you know, good
Now, when you were playing blackjack, it was really unusual for women to be betting a lot of money in the casinos, which made you kind of stick out, right? And once you started getting barred, the casinos had a tendency to remember you. So you went and got a disguise to make you look like a man?
What happened before this was I was at the Hilton. I got barred all the time because I was with Paul Rylance. Paul Rylance had no camouflage bets, so you go out minimum, and then if it calls for a maximum bet, we would go from $25 to $700, something ridiculous, no in between. So this really was burning his players out.
Kind of noticeable by the pit.
Yeah, kind of noticeable. And it was only, you know, older Asian women that were playing high limit money. I was only like 26. I didn't have the jewels or the clothes or the style. So I was like, where did this girl come from? But they also didn't believe you could beat of a 4 or 6 deck shoe. They just did not believe it was possible you could count that. So I had that advantage going for me, so it had conflict in their mind. So I was at the Hilton, and somebody said, the boss goes, do you pass that girl? And I did, and everybody else at the table was saying, what does she do? She's just betting her quarter chip, and I felt like Marlo Thomas. And the security guards came, and they dragged me, like, to kind of pick you up by your shoulders, and they dragged me across the table with my feet dangling, put my head in the craps table. So you want to play craps, girly? You know, do you want to play craps? And then over to the roulette table. And they physically dragged me out of the Hilton, and kind of the friendliest place on earth is, I think, the label they have over their front door. And out on the street I go, and I said, well, that's not going to happen again. So I went to New York City and really had professional makeup people work with me, work with the way I walked, work with, you know, a professional disguise, tried to make my hands look more masculine. I put some money into this, went right back into the Hilton, and got barred immediately.
Oh, dear.
It did not work, and all I was thinking is, oh, my God, please don't drag me into the back room, you know, dressed as a man.
It would be great, though, to have a, you know, a copy of your Griffin photograph dressed as – didn't it have a fake beard or something?
Oh, yeah, it did. It did. But one of the pit bosses looked right at me, and he goes, you're not fooling us. And I go, oh, good God, what do I do? What do I do here? So I was not particularly smart, but I have so many balls. I had so many balls. And I think it had fearlessness, absolute fearlessness. And I think it had something to do with being bipolar. I just never thought I was going to live very long. One time, one of the Czechoslovakians, we were just leaving Dover in Great Britain, and this is when I needed money a lot, and he really needed to get rid of me, Walter. And so he goes, I'll give you $10,000 to jump off the ship and swim back to shore. And I really, I remember
how far?
To those, I would have been dead so fast. I'm not even
the water there is very cold.
I was looking at the waters, and I really was contemplating doing this. And I said, there is something. You know, now I can say, wow, what was wrong with you? But, you know, being challenged, I just did not back down from a challenge then. Now I think I've gotten a little bit more sensible, but I've got other
problems. Now, what was the beef with the Czech team? Was it the same thing? They just didn't want to play with a woman?
They had one good reason. They didn't want to play with a woman. But women are more vulnerable to being robbed, and that is exactly true, and that's exactly what happened to me numerous times. So they were right, you know. I was a target in European casinos and got robbed to the point that maybe I should have given it up. You know, I was behind the pepper mill one night just clasping my
Peppermill in Las Vegas.
Yeah, Peppermill in Las Vegas. Yeah, I switched subjects very, very easily. Sorry. But this had to do with a robbery. And these two, see, I'm going to say this, black men, they were black.
Probably still are.
They probably still are. They walked toward me, and you just know, my heart sank, and I go, oh, God, I'm going to be robbed. Out comes the gun. Now, this is just because I didn't want to pay for the valet. I'm out here, and I get myself in this situation, and the guy goes, get back in the car. Now, I didn't do a lot of thinking at this point. It just was instinctual, throw the purse, keep walking. I just knew you don't get back in the car in this particular instance. That would have been wrong, and it all worked out. I just lost my money. That's all. Thank God. So I've never been injured in these robberies, but they've been freakish. And it takes a toll on you. It really, yeah. It's really invasive. And you feel like you've been raped when somebody takes so much money from you in those situations. So
how much? How much did they get in that situation?
In that Peppermill situation,
I don't even remember.
But in Spain, which was just a fluke, it was $70,000, which was my passport, my traveler's checks, any identification I had. And there was political unrest in Spain at that time, so I remember going to the police station and not even being able to get in. So now I have to find my way to the embassy. And I was not in shape anymore. I just went into a room, kept it dark for days, and just cried and cried and cried. And I said, God, I'm not going to pull myself out of it, but I always did seem to pull myself out of these deep, dark places and keep going back. But that was quite a down. That was all the money I had in the world, and I lost it in a freak robbery.
Now, you have been involved in a lot of different forms of advantage play. So 25 or more years ago, you had a professional slot machine team?
This does not come out of my genius. It comes out of the genius of other minds. It comes out of my ability to know who is really smart at what they do, listen to the directions, never swerve, and understand the dynamics well enough to know, since I got kicked out personally from playing slot machines, and Holiday right then had the greatest mechanical wheels, that I did hire Jerry Hattricks to go in and play on a team for me, because they were not suspected as well as the ones that can, you know, pull that handle so quickly. You know, they were kind of slow and methodical, and I'd be in the background going, oh my God, my team has no chance of hitting this slot going this slowly. But it was
well, it's like a public service hiring these people on Social Security to play slots for you.
Yes. And you had to count on them to file with the IRS, and it became, oh, such a mishmash. People were coming back to you. You know, the IRS says I owe so much money. And I said, no, you don't. You were supposed to file this form. Oh, I didn't file this form. Then you have to follow up, and you have to listen to their anxiety. It was a pain in the butt. It was a real pain in the butt.
But there was good money. I mean, first of all, I think a lot of people would be surprised that you can get barred for playing slot machines. But there was good money in that, right?
There was good money.
Still is.
You know, one mistake I made in your book, that when I was rereading my interview with you, I said, what a jackass I am. I put, that was after I made vast wealth. I go, what did I have, like, rubies and sapphires falling out of my butt? You know, I didn't have vast wealth. I looked at it. And my roommate now, her ex-husband, had a yacht that they had to make a special slip in the Long Beach Harbor in order to fit his yacht, and it had 13 bathrooms on it. Now, that's vastly wealthy. What I had was not vastly wealthy. I don't know how that even came out of my mouth. I was so embarrassed when I saw that. So I was not vastly wealthy. You know, so a couple $100,000 to me was a lot of money, a lot of money. But I didn't think I was going to live that long, so I could really spend as rapidly as I made the money. Because Chip Reese, this is so funny he said this. He always was so self-conscious about his weight. And he goes, I would give all the money I have in the world to be thin. He goes, because I know I could make it all back again. Well, I didn't have that feeling. I know that you're in certain gambling situations that are so ripe that you have to work yourself to death to take advantage of it while it's happening. I was a good worker, but I could see, I was also could see that clearly this situation was going to end. As far as seven card stud, I didn't want it to end. When I should have switched to no limit hold'em, I just refused to do so, even though I could see that a seven card stud was just going to disappear.
Mm-hmm. All right, so Kat, thank you. We have to do some commercials right now, but we have a few more questions for you, including something about the Kentucky Derby at the end. So we'd fill in the allotted time at that point. Hopefully, you can stay on the line for a few minutes.
I'll find something to do.
Oh, good. All right. The South Point has more than 10,000 video poker games, returning more than 99%. That's more than anybody else. During the month of April, every Sunday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, you get a free swipe if you earn 200 points. Swipes can range from 2,500 points worth $7.50 through $50 in free play, including a possible 2x points until midnight on the day swipe. Although swipes are random, historically they haven't been equal weighted. If you get big mailers, your swipe tend to be large. If you get small mailers, your swipes tend to be large. Double points days in April happen every Monday, midnight to midnight, no limits. The free video poker classes have ended for now. They'll likely resume again in the fall, and when they get going again, I'll announce it here and post it in all the usual places. At the Palms, the Friday, Saturday night drawings in April are called the $80,000 cash and free slot play drawing. Each night, 10 winners will receive money ranging from a bottom prize of $300 cash plus $300 free play to a top prize of $1,000 cash and $1,000 free play. The drawings are at 8 p.m. and are based on virtual entries since 8 p.m. the previous Saturday. On Friday and Saturday nights between 8 p.m. and midnight, you earn 3x drawing entries. The Monday, Wednesday, Friday PEW, Play, Earn, and Win, gifts for the first half of the month have a theme of jewelry and more, where the top prizes are a $100 Visa gift card and a $50 Visa gift card. That ends tomorrow. Beginning Monday, April 15th, the PEW gifts have a theme of name brand. There appear to be various purses, perfumes, and several other items. This month, for the first time, you can redeem your earned points any time in the week earned. The High Limit Slot Room is at the Palms is moving this coming week. The new location will be the room immediately next to the promotion center. All the machines will be shut down after dinner Tuesday evening, and hopefully we'll all be in place and hooked up by dinner time on Wednesday. Since Wednesday is a PEW day, this will limit your ability to play the high limit games that day and affect the number of tickets you can earn in that week's drawing. At videopoker.com, we frequently talk about the monthly contest. They also have daily contests there with smaller prizes, but introduce you to games you might not be familiar with. Until midnight today, April 11th, the daily contest is 50 play with Super Times Pay. For the next 3 days, the contest will be Extra Action Poker on Friday, Good Times Pay Poker on Saturday, and Deal Draw Poker on Sunday. The monthly contest in April will be from the 24th through the 30th and will feature Super Times Pay Poker. As is typical for the contest on videopoker.com, choose the game with the highest variance. You're only going to be playing 100 hands at a time in your sessions, and so you want to have the most chance in that sessions to get lucky. Our guest next week will be gaming analyst Ken Adams. He regularly writes for the CDC gaming reports. This will be Ken's second visit to the show, and Ken writes about all sorts of gambling topics. So there's no telling where he's knowledgeable about them all, so there's no telling where the conversation will lead. I guarantee you it'll be interesting. In 2 weeks, we'll have Nolan Dalla talking about this year's World Series of Poker. Since I'm not a poker player, my own World Series of Poker experience has been limited but successful. I did play 2 years ago in the media event, and I won something. I happened to knock out one of the bounty players and received some very nice earphones I'm proud of. I still use when I go to the gym. So I'm a successful World Series of Poker player. Ha ha. All right. So, Kat, there was this Kentucky Derby bet that you made that you're proud of. Tell us about that.
I am proud of this. I didn't leech on somebody else's brain. It was in 1986. I was reading in the paper that a horse called Bold Arrangement was being shipped from Great Britain. Now, this is just instinct. I was thinking, would they really ship a horse that was not going to be that they didn't think was going to be running in the Kentucky Derby? I said, this is worth going around to the sports books and finding out if they have any future bets on Bold Arrangement. I did find one at Samstown, and it was 500 to 1 to win. So I put 250 to win, 125 to place, 125 to show.
Uh-huh.
When the time of the horse did run in the Kentucky Derby,
so just,
I was in a hillbilly bar in upstate New York, sitting way back. This is where these are my family. I was sitting with my family and a bunch of these hillbillies all watching this little screen over the bar on Kentucky Derby. And they all had their $2 bets. I never said a word about my bet. And I'm watching the race, and jockey Chris McCarron was on Bold Arrangement and running a fantastic race. Bold Arrangement went off like 9-1. And Willie Shoemaker cost me $125,000.
The
this
nerve,
was
man.
Willie Shoemaker's swan song. He was on Ferdinand. He nosed out Bold Arrangement at the end, and I did win $47,000 on this race. Now, the lesson attached to this, that before the race went off, I had a friend who I slightly had a crush on. I didn't know, was he a friend? Could this possibly be something more? And he goes, can I have 10% of your bet? And I was thinking, well, this isn't wise. And he goes, well, that's what good friends do for each other. That's what we did back in Brooklyn. So I caved under the pressure and gave him the 10%, which ended up...
At what price?
$4,700 to him.
You just gave it to him or sold it to him?
The actual equity... I didn't sell it to him. He didn't even want to give me the money that was invested. The actual equity was approximately $1,900. So in effect, he simply asked me to give him money. So I'm just saying to women or men that get in this situation, don't let friends put you on pressure like this when you've made a good bet and try to weasel in the end, because people will do that.
Now,
sounds like he was a poker player.
He was a poker player.
Now, Sam's Town, when you won this bet, were they happy to put your picture up? That we got big winner here at Sam's Town, or how did that work?
No, they took me in the back. They were very suspicious. But they did pay the bet off, but it took them a couple weeks to pay the bet off. I think they did a lot of investigation on their own. And I was getting kind of, oh, my God, I'm not going to get paid off. But I did get paid off, so everything turned out all right. So sometimes, you know, as a gambling wizard, which is kind of like a fraudulent title, but I do have balls. If the book was named Gambling Balls, I should have been on the front cover. But I really had instinct here, and I have great instinct on knowing when I need the answer to a mathematical question. I just know who knows what they know, and I know who to trust, and that's what my true talent is.
Well, I think the other thing that you got really right is recognizing a good situation and just really, you know, working it to death when the situation is there, because no situation is going to last forever.
No situation does. And sometimes gamblers, they think it's going to, and it just disappears. And like Paul Rylance's idea for playing blackjack was just gingerly hit each one of these European casinos and the Asian, you know, don't burn them down. But the Czechs went right, which was his, you know, he had trained them. The Czechoslovakian team went right ahead of us, and they didn't care. They thought, I'm never coming back here. I'm burning them right to the ground, and we were in their wake. And so they'd already figured out the casinos about card counting at that point. So maybe the Czechoslovakians were correct in their attitude toward the game, and Paul was wrong.
Well, I actually think it's more nuanced than that. I think there are times when it's right to burn a game and other times when it's right to milk a game. But that could be a topic for a whole show, probably.
Yes, you have an article.
Nuanced, that was such a good word. I love that word in relation to what you said.
What, nuanced?
Yeah, nuanced. It was a very good word.
Yeah, he's full of good words.
Well, yeah, Kathy and I play Scrabble together, so. Although she's been beating me.
Ah, well, maybe your words haven't been nuanced enough, Richard.
Right.
Kathy, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to have you on the air. Richard, good night. Everybody, go out and hit lots of royal flushes. We taped the show earlier in the afternoon, and we turned out we ran out a little bit early, so we got a couple minutes left. So a great story that happened this last Sunday night. I was going to be at midnight at South Point, starting at for double points, and since on Sunday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, you can earn a swipe if you play 200 points, and it could be $50 in free play or something really good. So I got there like a quarter to midnight, so I could quickly play the 200 points and rush. And so by the time I swiped, it was 11:55, and the prize I got was double points between then and midnight, when I was going to start playing double points at midnight anyway. So it was double points is normally something I'm really excited about because it's a very lucrative situation at South Point. But this is a time of 5 minutes of double points didn't float my boat. Good night, everybody.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.